If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Nerd Nest podcast. We've got a bit of a cut down group today. There's just the three of us. It's me, it's Russ, it's Carrie. Guys, I hope you're having a fantastic day. We have a lot of stuff to talk about, and I want to start this off by talking about the ROG Ally 2, which was just, I don't want to say announced, but it feels like a foregone conclusion because the guy in charge of Asus said, you know, oh, I guess we are going to put out a new version this year. I mean, I sent a message to you guys and I was like, why would they announce that now? Just announce it when it's getting ready to come out, because who in their right mind is going to buy an ROG Ally 1 at this point, knowing that in just 6 months or so, we're going to get the ROG Ally 2? Russ, what was your reaction when you read that?
Yeah, same kind of thing. I'm like, well, yeah, no one wants to buy the first one now, or they're just going to wait until it goes on clearance, you know, when the second one comes out. And it's still going to be a nice machine at that point as well, but probably $100 or even more cheaper. And so, yeah, I mean, the other part of it, I thought to myself, I'm like, well, he's tempering expectations because he's trying to say, we're not Valve, we're not going to be releasing it in a console cycle, we're releasing this more in a laptop cycle, like you do with a refresh of all their other product lines. And so that's kind of a good thing on their end, just to kind of get people ready for the idea that, yeah, we'll be doing this every year kind of thing. And so I don't think it's a bad thing in that perspective, but yeah, I'm not sure how much it's going to sell now.
Well, what do you mean by it's going to sell? Do you mean the one or the two?
The one, the original, sorry. Yeah, like the one that's available right now. I don't know how many people are going to want to buy it now. They're like, well, let's just wait for the new thing. And I don't know. It's always hard to tell, too, because how many people are just going to buy the bleeding edge thing and others are just kind of, oh, now's the time because I got, you know, a Christmas bonus or whatever. And so there's always many factors involved. It's not necessarily just I have to buy like bigger number, better kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people really push back on this idea that we would get new hardware every year from these companies like Asus and probably Lenovo, where they're going to put out a new one every year, just like they do with laptops. And a lot of people are like, I don't want to buy one every year. And the thing that I always say to those people is nobody is making you buy every single one. But when you're ready to buy one, then the newest one isn't that old. And so you get to get the most bang for your buck. Plus, the older ones are cheaper. So you can make a decision about, I'm going to go with this one because if it's a lower price point, or I'm going to go with this one because it's a little bit more future proof. It'll last the longest. Now, other people have said, well, hold on, Bill. You're not going to get very much of a boost each time. And that's absolutely true. I totally get that. But I still don't see why people feel like just because they bought one last year, that anybody who buys one this year has to buy the one that they bought or else they feel like they got ripped off. What are your thoughts on that, Carrie?
Well, specifically with this generation, it seemed like, based on the naming scheme, right, the Z1, that there was going to be a Z2. So this is just AMD's way of acknowledging that there is a handheld scene for the PC scene happening, much like the Steam Deck has created. So the Z1 is a offshoot of the 7840U, their high-end laptop spec, consumer-grade laptop spec. There's the HS and HX ones, which are like very high wattage workstation laptops type of deal, where technically the 7840U and 7840HS, HX, all of those ones, well, the HX is going to be Dragon Range, so you have 16 cores. It's a different CPU arrangement. When you look at them, there's not really any difference. You can have 7840U compete against 7840HS just by pushing more power into it. That's literally the only difference. So when you take a look at Z1, it's a 7840U without the XNDNA stuff active. They disable that. And we already know that the 8840U is a 7840U with upclocked XNDNA parts, which will be disabled on the Z2. So the Z2 and the Z1 are more or less going to be exactly the same. The only thing that we're going to see potentially is a GISA updates, so the microcode firmware level stuff that may act differently between these two models. So potentially there is something in there that could happen that makes things a bit better. And the reason I say that is because right now, even on the ASUS RG Ally, you can just like disable hyper boost, turbo boost, and get significantly better battery life and no difference in performance for certain games, because you don't need to spend all that power on going to 3 GHz, 3.5 GHz on the CPU. You'll be fine at 2.4 GHz. It's just that right now, Windows and AMD, largely a lot of things, do a very, very bad job of saying, oh, the game is running at 60 FPS. I don't need to be burning all this power to achieve this, but we're in this realm right now. So quite literally, the Z2, this next generation ASUS, the ASUS RG Ally 2, from a performance standpoint, ostensibly looks like it's going to be absolutely the same. So there will be no difference between these two, outside of maybe the ASUS RG Ally has 2 has 32 gigs of RAM. Maybe it has an OLED panel. So this is where you find where things can be improved. And that's the only place that you're really going to see things. So yeah, it's not that like anyone should, especially right now with what we know, no one should be like, oh, I got the ASUS RG Ally, I'm like the performance good. It's not going to be that at all. You're going to have slightly better performance where games need more RAM, so just more VRAM. So texture data size, that'll be an improvement. Perhaps if it's an OLED VRR, that's going to be sick. So that's where I still love the ASUS RG panel itself, the one. The LCD of VR panel is fantastic. There's also some other news about that that I can't talk about right now, but there's good stuff coming just from that alone. So I don't know. From my point of view, getting an ASUS RG Ally 1, like open box for like $500, is like an insane deal. It was AYN, their Loki, just got discounted. And even at the price that it is, I'm like, I probably would just recommend someone get an open box Ally.
Russ, didn't you say that you saw an open box Ally for like 300 or something?
They were doing 399 for the Z1 non-extreme one.
Oh, so, okay, the non-extreme. Okay.
Yeah, so not the performance in that is not great, but
No.
that price is still, man, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah, the
so
thing
I
is with
think.
this,
Go ahead.
go ahead. I was just
No,
going to
you.
say, even laptop like manufacturers understand that people aren't going to be buying these every year. And so I have two schools of thought. The first one is that anytime a new laptop spec comes out, I never hear anyone saying, well, now my laptop's obsolete, right? But somehow that happens with like a handheld console. Like, oh, now there's an ROG Ally 2, my ROG Ally is obsolete. Like that's something we're going to be seeing. The other thing is that like I remember when the M3 MacBook Pros were announced, they did all their spec comparisons, like, look, it's 50% faster, blah, blah, blah. But they did it against the M1. They didn't even do it against the M2 because they were specifically targeting people, not those who were buying it every year, but those who maybe bought the M1s, a few years back and were ready for an upgrade. And so they really tailored their marketing specifically for that kind of like two generation upgrade kind of thing. So even on the laptop thing, they're not expecting people to buy one every iteration.
Right, and it's like phones. People, I mean, yeah, there are people that buy a new phone every single year, but most people buy a phone, and then when they decide, all right, I think it's time for me to upgrade, they just either get the newest one or they get one that's a couple of years old at a steeper discount, which This is no different than that. The thing is that people somehow, I don't understand why, because these are PCs. I know that I've said console 1,000 times. These are PCs, and they play all the same games. But somehow people come to these with a console mentality where when the PS4, or I'm sorry, when the PS5 comes out, the PS4 is obsolete. When the new Xbox comes out, well, guess what? The number of games that are going to come out for the Xbox One, the old one, like those are going to be less. Like, you're not going to be able to get those games for very much longer. But when we're talking about these handheld PCs that are very console-like, they're still going to keep playing the same games that they've always been able to play and the new games that are coming out, as long as they have enough power to run them. And mm-hmm. I think that people just, like, there's this strange barrier that I feel like people have trouble getting over when it comes to, I don't want them to put out a new thing. Now, some people will say, if they put out a new thing, they'll stop supporting the old thing. I think these companies, with the exception of Valve, they're going to, whether they put out a new thing or not, they're going to stop supporting the old thing anyway, just because that's what they do. These companies are famous for just kind of, all right, we're done with that. Let's leave that on in the dust, and we're going to move on with our lives. Anything, Kerry?
Yeah, so there is actually one thing that could be like a surprise for all of us, is that because it's Asus, they have the capability, provided that AMD would also do it, is that Strixhalo could have a Z1 Extreme Pro Max version, like, mm-hmm. you know, the MacBooks do. Literally, mm-hmm. that's what the Mac is, literally more GPU and more bandwidth,
right?
Which is what Halo Strix is. So there is that possibility, right? Like, that could potentially happen. In that event, if there were an Asus ROG Ally 2 with a Z2e Max Pro Schmax, it's going to be exceedingly more performant across the board. So that is one thing that I wish we could get. It's quite literally the same thing that I said. Strixhalo is pretty much the exact thing that I said what Microsoft should make for their handheld, essentially.
Yeah. Another quote that came out of this, IGN kind of, I don't like how IGN did this. Because they were quoting this interview, I guess, over at TechSclusive, and they said, on the IGN website, it said he also told the outlet, meaning TechLusive, that the ROG Ally sold around 70 to 80,000 units, which sounds really, really bad, right? Like, holy cow, that's very small. Of course, in the realm of handheld PCs, that's not that bad. That's pretty decent, Steam Deck aside, because a lot of these other devices just don't sell very many. But then I clicked through to the TechSclusive article, or TechLusive. That's a terrible name, people. What are you doing here? I clicked through their article, and it says, he said, in India, we sold 70 to 80,000 units.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a huge difference.
And I'm like, right, that is a ridiculous difference. I'm going to try and bring this up. We'll see if it loads okay. It did not load okay. Why would IGN leave that piece of information out? And it's like, it's not even... Yeah, here we go. I'm going to bring it up on screen now. Sorry, audio listeners. I know you're not looking at this. It says right here, in India, we sold around 70 to 80,000 units.
It is hilarious.
Yes, that's just so bad. I was shocked that they did that, because when I first saw it, I was like, ooh, 70 to 80,000.
That's
way lower than I thought that they would have sold. But that's just in India. What do you guys think the sell-through rate is for the ROG Ally? I mean, obviously, nobody knows. But Russ, do you have any guesses?
No idea. I'll tell you, like, I was walking through, it was either like Yogyakarta, Indonesia, or it was in Bali. One of those, I was in a mall, and they had a little Asus booth, and there was an ROG Ally just sitting there. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, man, that's deep penetration into like the global market. If I'm in mm-hmm. just like a tiny little Southeast Asian city or country, you know, and I'm looking at just this random little booth, and that has an ROG Ally. That is much further reach than most other handhelds that you can think of.
Absolutely. Gary?
Yeah. If I were to take a guess, I would say that I would anticipate at least 1 million units for them to consider doing another one. 70,000 to 80,000 units when I first saw them, I'm like, they're going to do another one? Like, that doesn't even sound right. Like, that would be, that's an utter failure. That's a catastrophic failure for a company like Asus to sell 70,000 or 80,000, like, total. But in India alone, okay. But I don't, in like US and UK, which would also be bigger markets, and then China as well, also being a very big market. I would love to see those. So I would anticipate that actual units is probably around 1 million, if I had to take a guess.
Yeah. They also said we're sticking with Windows, so no chance of Steam OS coming on this thing, which is too bad. But you know, maybe someday we'll be able to install it if Valve lets us. Carrie has something to say.
The latest update that they came out with the ROG Ally stuff, their armor crate, it's
good.
Fixed a lot of things for me, insofar as like using Windows on a handheld without a keyboard and mouse. They did a lot there that I found it to be more than adequate for getting around, quickly closing a game, much like how Steam Deck does, but being in a Windows PC. Considering that we still don't have Game Pass on Steam Deck, which I think would be like, if Microsoft doesn't make an Xbox handheld, they really got to figure out a way to get Game Pass working on Steam Deck, because I think that would be a huge increase in numbers by itself. Well, huge. At least 3 million people would get Game Pass or whatever that number is that already had it. But it's a really good service. So that is the one advantage that the Asus ROG Ally has now, is that you can play those Game Pass PC games on that device. And insofar as it being a very handheld-centric Windows gaming PC, it's with Armoury Crate, the latest update, quite usable.
I think it's the most usable Windows interface. You know, the thing that just drives me nuts is I'll be playing around and I'll be like, man, this thing is so great. Start up a game, just kind of, I do a lot more tinkering than I do actually playing. And then I look down and the battery's at 60% and I'm like, oh, yeah. That was a great 25 minutes, but you know, now I've got to have battery anxiety all over again. And so that's the thing that just bothers me about it. And so I hope they do refresh that battery size.
That needs to be a shirt, by the way. Battery anxiety. That's a really that's good. I'll work on that, people. I agree with you guys that the like Armoury Crate has improved leaps and bounds from when it first came out. But the problem has never really been Armoury Crate. There were things about it that I wasn't really a fan of. But what happens is when I go to launch a game, when it works, it works. But when it doesn't, then I'm stuck with this Windows interface and it's a pain. And I have to like mess around with stuff. That's the one thing that I really don't like, is when it works, it works. But when it doesn't, it's a very bad experience. And I would say for me, my favorite Windows handheld right now is still the Legion Go. And the one reason why has nothing to do with the gimmicky controllers that you could take off and do first-person shooter stuff with. I never take them off unless I'm transporting the device. The reason I like it so much is because it has that 8.8-inch screen and all of the touch targets are bigger. It's just easier to navigate Windows when you have a big screen like that. So, but we've said this on the show 1,000 times. You know, Microsoft needs to pull their heads out of their rear ends, and we'll talk about them more later. They need to pull their heads out of their rear and just give us a good user interface. I don't care if it's Windows. I don't care. Like, Windows is fine. It's just the UI is bad. And there's all those people that are going to be like, well, Windows is bloated, blah, blah, blah. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I'm not going to sit here and argue about whether it's bloated or not. My problem for me is the UI. The UI is a hot garbage on a stick, and I hate it. And this SteamOS is just so much better of a user interface. And then people will argue with me, and they'll say, well, but you got to use Linux, and if you don't know how to use Linux, no, because I don't go into desktop mode for almost anything on SteamOS. But on Windows, I have to be in desktop mode all the time. Like, I don't get to choose. So that's just me. Anything else about the ROG Ally 2 with you guys?
My big thing is just like, I'm just not sure what they're going to do, you know, like, sure, OLED, great, but don't take away my VRR because I need that, you know, and then also, you know, bigger battery life. But unless they make some sort of really phenomenal kind of change when it comes to the CPU and the processor and stuff, it's not going to feel like an ROG Ally 2. It's going to feel like an ROG Ally OLED, you know, like that or kind whatever. Of thing.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, I'm not sure what else they can do.
That's a good point. Let's assume that the CPU, performance-wise, is going to be very similar. We'll just assume that Carrie's right and the performance is going to be the same. So let's talk about what should they change. I'm going to say, number one, they got to move the freaking SD card port to somewhere else.
Yeah, I think like that's like, I mean, that's a huge thing, right? Like, I think that's like number one kind of thing that everyone wants to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Move that somewhere else. Okay, so that's out of the way. You know, Russ, you said OLED. Do you think that OLED is super important for you as an upgrade, or is that like a, it'll be nice because the panel, like we said before, the panel on this is really nice already.
Right. It's one of my favorite LCD panels. And so, yeah, I get why the OLED people are going to be like, oh yeah, finally OLED, but man, that LCD panel is really great. And so it's not going to be a huge upgrade for me. Just, you know, the biggest thing for me is that 120 Hertz variable refresh rate.
Yeah. Yeah, that's OLED. So on a handheld, OLED VRR is what everyone has been waiting for forever. So if you can get whatever it is, especially now that if they can support like how Armory Crate does 900p on that panel, which is a fantastic resolution to run the panel at. If you can do 900p, 120 frames a second with VRR or 144 FPS with VRR, now you're in a place where this is like premium. That's absolutely premium, and that is a worthwhile upgrade. And you know, like the things that you guys said as well is like they should consider upgrading the battery considerably, because 40 watt hour is even for Steam Deck was like a weird, like, is there some weight limit that you guys are trying to like get under, which is crazy too, right? Because the Steam Deck OLED has a 50 watt hour battery and it weighs less than the original Steam Deck, so they got rid of some stuff, increased battery, which is technically the heaviest part of any handheld there is. So increasing the battery while also lowering the total weight was a feat. So I feel like Asus can do it, but also, I don't know, maybe I'm just not the norm. I don't care if the device weighs a pound. That doesn't bother me. I don't know. There's that shirt that I have is like, do you even handheld, bro? Which is like an inside joke. But, I think most people, it's the same thing, right? When the iPhone 4 was out, it was like the perfect size phone. And when the Galaxy Note 2 came out, everyone was like, ugh, that thing is huge and heavy. And now the iPhone 6 Pro Max is like a giganto phone. You know what I mean? And they just kept on making the phones just larger. Yeah.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, and it's heavy.
I could not go back. You get used to heavier.
Exactly.
I could not go back to a small phone.
Exactly. And it's a thing that, what's a weird thing. So there's a quick anecdote. I was at my old office for two old jobs ago, but I was in the kitchen and I took out my Samsung Galaxy Note 2, and unsolicited, this girl is like, if my man ever pulled that out, we'd have to be over. Like, that's what she said. And I was like, you would like stop dating a guy because he had a phone this large? Then like 2 years later or whatever, or three years later, she had the giganto iPhone. And I was like, uh-huh. So now you see, right? And that's the thing that I always find myself is like, this is kind of a rant, but I'm still waiting for a gaming phone. I wish AYN would make a gaming phone, but every time they talk about a gaming phone, they're like, why don't you just get an Android handheld and have your phone? And I'm like, guys, there's a million Android handhelds that are not phones. You guys are already satisfied. There is no gaming phone. So why are you telling me no to a gaming phone when it doesn't exist and you have millions of things that you can choose from? Like, get out of this conversation. Go away. A gaming phone needs to happen. At least one, please.
I want one just for you, Carrie, but I'm not buying that with ever. I will never buy that.
Today. But once you realize, you're like, oh, you know, maybe if it is a little bit thicker. Yeah. You'll see.
No, thank you.
You'll see.
Well, all right. Let's. So, okay. OLED screen. Is 120 hertz important enough to you guys, or would you guys be happy? Oh. Like, I like the 90 hertz on the Steam Deck. 120 hertz, I don't care about nearly as much. I know
if
the
it's
VR.
It's a bright enough panel. I definitely want 120 hertz because it has that black frame insertion.
Oh,
that you
that's
can work
right.
With.
I always yeah. forget about the BFI.
Yeah. So that's the sweet spot for me, at least, when it comes to playing that retro gaming and stuff. But it has to be a bright enough panel, and the Allies is. And so yeah. Mm-hmm. that's kind of the big takeaway there, because it does like reduce your brightness by half, basically, when you play that way.
And also, BFI and OLEDs is superior to LCDs. Mm.
Yeah,
these black frames are literally nothing. They just turn off, like, right. So it yeah. just BFI on OLEDs just look, the image clarity, motion clarity is just way superior, even though on the Asus ROG Ally it is still very good.
Yeah, it's definitely something I keep wanting to check that out. You know what I would really like? I would like a panel on, like, this is my Miu Mini Plus. I would like to get a panel on my Miu Mini Plus that has that has the frame rate that can go high enough so that I could get BFI on this little screen. I don't know how battery sucking that would be, but God, that would look really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, technically speaking, it would all just be on the panel itself and the backlight. The backlight is going to be your biggest draw for an LCD. So it really depends on how far you're pushing that backlight to compensate for the BFI part on the LCD, to overcompensate for the diminished brightness from inserting black frames into there. So yeah. That is really all that would happen, is the refresh rate doesn't really do anything for power-wise. It's the backlight that is going to be your biggest power draw.
All right. Well, Miu, get on it. I will buy another thing, okay? That's all I want. Speaking of buying more things, that we finally have some... Finally, we've been having rumors for the Nintendo Switch 2 for 7 damn years, or as Carrie likes to call it, the Super Switch. And we got this rumor that was posted on Twitter from Wario64, and he's quoting Bloomberg, and he's basically saying, hey, it looks like we're going to be getting a new Nintendo Switch this year. It's going to have an 8-inch LCD screen, according to Omaeda analyst Hiroshi Hayase. And if I pronounce that wrong, I'm sure that Russ will correct me, because I did okay. All right, thanks. So first off, that is a very surprising thing for them to say, because Nintendo, you know, they brought out the OLED Nintendo Switch and everybody was like, oh my God, it's just so freaking good. And it is. It's a gorgeous screen. And using the OLED Switch, I was like, well, I think everything's OLED going forward, right? And then the Steam Deck came out, and then the Steam Deck brought out the OLED version. I'm like, yeah, see, everything's going OLED as we move forward. And now Nintendo is bringing out an 8-inch LCD screen. Mm-hmm. So here's the first question. I don't want to get it into the weeds on whether or not I don't want to get too far away from this question yet. Does the fact that they say it's an 8-inch LCD screen make you doubt this report, Carrie?
No, I believe it.
Okay, Russ?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I've got reasons why I think it's a dumb move, but it doesn't make me doubt the report.
Okay. So now let's assume that the report is true. 8-inch LCD screen. So that's kind of like right between the OLED Steam Deck and the Lenovo Legion Go, which has an 8.8-inch screen. The OLED Steam Deck has a 7.5-inch screen, right? Is it 7.5?
7.4 or something.
7.4? Yeah. Okay. So it's like right in between those two. What do you think about an 8-inch screen for the Super Switch? Are you excited about that, or do you feel like that's too big? You don't want to have something that bulky. Fox?
So the one thing that I hope, and I don't know if this is going to be the case, if they were to do 8-inch, I have to measure it again, but if they were able to do it like bezel-less inside of the same form factor as a Switch so that they could maintain using the same Joy-Cons, that is something that I would love, because I know that there's a lot of people that have a bunch of Joy-Cons that they would love to just kind of like continue using on the Super Switch. I don't know if that's going to be the case. It could be the case that they just have entirely new Joy-Cons so that they can sell new things, which sounds very Nintendo-like of them to do.
Yeah.
So with that whole caveat, I think the size of the Switch is something that everyone kind of already is like, yeah, that's a good size. So if we were to max that out, that means that the aspect ratio would not be 16:9. It would be some other aspect ratio to kind of like be a bezel-less thing inside of that whole tablet space. I don't know if that's going to be 8 inches, but or if they just redesign the tablet itself to be, 8 inches, 16:9, and just make it wider or whatever. I am a big fan of it overall, and the LCD part just makes me even further believe that it's true, just because that's the Nintendo playbook, right? Like the 3DS comes out, then the 3DS XL comes out, and then the 2DS comes out. And they just keep on pivoting in different structures to just resell you the same thing in like the same basic stuff, but just resell it to you in the new version, right? So that's just the Nintendo playbook.
I mean, they got me with the Nintendo playbook doing that. I bought the original Switch when it first came out. And then the first revision, I don't remember, like it was HB01 to HB001 or something like that, which had a more efficient chip in it, which didn't give you more power, but it used less battery, so you had a better battery life. Yeah. I ended up upgrading at that point, and then I ended up buying the OLED Switch. So I mean, outside of buying one for my son, I bought three Nintendo Switches.
Yep.
Just for me.
Yeah.
So they got me, and yeah. So
you're gonna get Rusty, everyone.
Do you think that's what they're doing here? Is they're going to ship this, I'll call it Super Switch, otherwise Carrie will come after me. They'll bring out this Super Switch with an 8-inch LCD screen, and in 3 years we'll see the Super Switch OLED?
Yeah, I that's the thing I think the LCD is kind of a bad move. I get that's their playbook, but man, how many people are going to be able to say, I'm just going to wait for the OLED version? That's an argument that now is part of that discourse that really didn't have to be there. It would be a very pro-consumer move for them just to make the OLED right now. And I can see why they're not doing it, but man, I wish they would. Speaking of the 8 inches, though, so I have a couple handhelds that are exactly 8 inches, but they're 16:10 aspect ratio. So the original AOK Zoe A1 was an 8-inch 16:10, and it is a more immersive experience compared to like something like the Steam Deck. I remember that feeling when I was reviewing it after already owning a Steam Deck, where I was like, man, this is more immersive just because it's like an extra inch. But man, playing like a game like Destiny 2 on it was just so much better. And so I do like the fact they're going to 8 inches. I don't think it'd be too big. I would also find it pretty cool if they did something that wasn't 16:9, but I'm not really sure considering the fact that all of the original Switch games were. So we'll see.
Well, as far as the aspect ratio, 16:9 versus 16:10, I can see a couple of reasons why they would want to go 16:10. First off, going like backwards compatibility with the Nintendo Switch, if that does happen, a black bar on the top and bottom, not really that big of a deal. Especially, right. Well, on an OLED system, it's really not that big of a deal. On an LCD, it's a little bit more big of a deal because you can see it. That being said, Russ, as Mr. Retro Man, you know, 16 by 10 is better. And Nintendo has been building that Nintendo Switch Online library of, you know, you have your subscription so you can play all these old games. They would look better on that 16 by 10 inch display. Sure. So
including GameCube, if they were able to bring that as part of the Switch 2. Yeah.
What'd you say?
I say including GameCube, if they bring that as part of the Switch 2, they're like, hey, this thing's more powerful. We're also going to bring GameCube to our Nintendo Switch Online catalog. That'd be cool. And those mostly played in 4x3, so that'd be great
too. Yeah. Well, not only that, I mean, I think I saw recently that Nintendo was doing some trademark stuff with GameCube over in England. This was like last week or the week before. And of course, everybody always is like, oh my God, what's happening? We're going to, but they could just be saying, well, we have to refresh the trademark in order to keep, like, lawyer's going to lawyer, you know? But it could, it could be related to this with, you know, 16 by 10 on that new 8-inch screen. Using, you know, you're playing the old GameCube games, not all the GameCube games, just the ones that Nintendo's nice enough to give you, because they're a bunch of jerks about that. But I think that that's pretty compelling, and I can see Nintendo selling it in that way. But it also does make the system taller, and that makes it harder to be Joy-Con compatible. Although, personally, I hope that they completely ditch the Joy-Cons and have something, some other thing, because I think that the Joy-Cons are, like, they're just not comfortable to play.
Totally.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So the one thing that I do feel like what Russ is saying would be a general sentiment is like, oh, well, I'll just wait for the Super Switch OLED version. But then there's that one group in Nintendo that are just economic wizards that just know is like, okay, if we make exactly this amount of units, they're going to sell out within about 13 hours. And then everyone's going to have FOMO like crazy. And then they won't care that there's not an OLED model because they're going to be scrambling to get what we give them. And Nintendo has this system so perfectly calibrated. I think the only thing that they ever messed up on, like, the Wii U was a big mess up, but that was a different thing, and I don't think those guys can fix. But you have, like, the Amiibos for Animal Crossing, where they made way too many of those things. Like, they over-anticipated how many of those are going to be, and then they had to, like, fire sell them because there was too many of them. I think it's, like, the only time that they've ever, like, truly, like, made a miscalculation on how much to produce of something. But, yeah, I think, like, the Super Switch, when it comes out, it's just going to be a thing that everyone scrambles for, and then the pre-orders are going to sell out, and then everyone's going to be like, oh, where do I get this thing? And everyone's concerns of the new model is just going to be, whatever, I just need to get this.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be the games, you know, like the when Metroid Prime 4 becomes the launch title. Exactly. Yeah, fingers crossed, then, yeah, I can see a lot of people buying it.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, they got me.
It's always the games. Like, the Nintendo Switch, like, it didn't have it had no games. I think there were 7 games at launch or something like that.
But Breath of the Wild was huge.
Yeah, everybody, all of the third part, like, the Wii came out, everybody kind of ignored Nintendo. The Wii sold like crazy, so all the third-party companies were like, okay, we're going to make a bunch of shovelware. We'll make as much as we can for the Wii.
Yeah.
Then the Wii U gets announced, and they were like, all right, the Wii U launched with, I think it was 32 launch titles, which is crazy, because third parties were like, oh, Nintendo kind of has it. They nailed it last time. We're going to support them. And then the Wii U sold 14.7 million units worldwide lifetime. So everybody was like, "Duh, Nintendo is gone. They're dead. They can't do anything." So when the Switch comes out, 7 titles, like no third-party support, but one of those games was Breath of the Wild with over 100% attach rate.
Yeah.
And so everybody was talking about this game, and it just flew off the shelves. People couldn't get the Switch fast enough. And because of that, all of these, you know, the third parties turned around again. And so I imagine that whatever this system is, it's going to launch with lots of games. And it's going to launch with something big from Nintendo.
For sure.
So it's going to sell very, very well. I think Nintendo has captured lightning in a bottle, and all they have to do is not screw up. Yep. Like, they have the mind space of the gaming in, audience right now. They've captured them. So all they have to do is not screw up. They screwed up last time with the Wii U. We'll see what happens with the Nintendo Switch or the Super Switch or whatever it is that we want to end up, that they end up calling it. But, you know, I want to go back to what Russ was saying about the people who are like, I'm just going to wait for the OLED version. I think the number of people, like if you just walked, if you stood outside of a GameStop and you asked the people walking in and out of there, do you know what OLED is? I think most of them would be like, no, I don't know. They just go in and buy a game and they play it. They don't really care. The people who really care about that are a very small section of the industry. And I just don't see that those people who really care about OLED, who I'm one of them, I don't see those people waiting, like making a big enough of a difference for Nintendo to really just consider. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The problem is that all of those folks are online. And so it makes it seem it's like it's larger, you know. It's almost like I'm just kind of pre-annoyed about the comments that I'm going to see of people saying, I'll just wait for the OLED version. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because we're going to see it a bunch. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean that's the reality of it. But, man, I'm pre-annoyed at it.
Yeah, it is fascinating, like, when you realize how, like, if you're just surrounded by the ultra-hardcore, your perception of what's going on is different. Mm. But there is a small anecdote about that. When you ask people what OLED is, they wouldn't know. When the Wii was coming out, they had a demo station up in a GameStop, and I was there. And a dude comes up and gets up to him and goes, Nintendo, why? He mispronounced the Wii. And I was like, that's pretty accurate. Nintendo, yeah. Why?
Nintendo, why? Oh, my God. That is that's a shirt coming soon to Fox's YouTube channel, the Nintendo, why? That's fantastic. Well, speaking of OLED, you know, Carrie, you've been doing your OLED test for the Steam Deck. It's sitting back there behind you. And, you know, I'm curious, how many hours has it been so far?
So it's around 500 hours. I'm going to do, like, I'm just going to terminal into it. I've disabled the Wi-Fi in there, but I'm going to have to re-enable it when I take it out. I've taken a peek at it, and there's some surprising results. So when I do an uptime result, I'll be able to get a more accurate reading of how long it's been running. But it's around 500 hours at this point. February 11th, I had marked on my calendar as the 1,000-hour mark when I was going to do my first video on it. But I took a peek because I just wanted to see. I was like, is 1,000 hours too long? Like, can I see anything right now? And I can. I can already see burn-in. Burn-in is... This is a large semantics thing, and you're going to get people that are overly technical saying that it's not burning. It is indeed not burning. It's image retention.
I want to pause real quick, and I just want to point out the idea that Carrie would say that somebody is going to get overly technical is one of the funniest things that's ever happened on this show. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Effectively, it doesn't matter, right? People are going to say burn-in because when you're looking at something, there is a noticeable after image that is a ghost-like on the screen. Burn-in, technically, is actually burning in. So you saw this on plasmas, you saw this on CRTs. CRT that had the same thing shown over, when you turn off the monitor, you can still see the image burned in to the screen. So that's burn-in. This is an image retention issue. Effectively, the OLED pixels, because they're self-emissive, they are less emissive because I've been overusing them. So what we're seeing is, like, the rest of the screen is able to outperform the stuff that's always been displayed. So you can see this outline of, because it's not able to push to the same level as the other pixels that are currently off, all the black stuff. So that's what we're seeing. We're seeing an image retention issue. Now, can I try to fix that? There are some methods that we can hopefully fix the image somehow. So I'll try to power off the device, power back on, use some online tools to try to, like, do something with the surrounding pixels to see if I can fix it. But as it is right now, when I go to the menu, you can see it. You can see the outline of it.
So, you know, Bob Wolf, he's been on the show before. He did the same test that you're doing. Well, okay, that's not true. No. You're doing a real test. Nothing against Bob. He was doing this on the Switch. He can't really do a real test. He just turned it on in a screenshot of Breath of the Wild.
Right.
And left it on to see what would happen. Your test is way more rigorous, right?
So, yeah, my test is able to work in HDR mode, where it wouldn't be able to otherwise with just a single screenshot. For what it's worth, what Bob did was fine because he had like very high contrast. So he had a white that's going to be pushing RGB to its max. So effectively what he did was fine, especially because whatever that panel can do would be what it's going to do. So I think what Bob Wolf's test was fine. It's just that the brightness that can go on the SWOLED is obviously not as bright as what the Steam Deck OLED can do. And because this is the first panel that can, handheld panel that can do HDR on OLED, you know, the difference in power is like, if you were to do all white on this, on SDR, at full brightness, that's about 2 watts. And if you go to HDR, it's 5 watts. So you're looking at like 2.5 times more power being pushed through the panel in HDR full max. So that is that's a large difference. That's a ginormous difference between these two panels. And that's what my test does, is my test actually does SDR and HDR. And we can see differences between the two of them, even at 500 hours. So the HDR stuff that I'm pushing has a more pronounced ghost-like image when you're looking around. The one thing that I have to like kind of be very mindful to say is that the test that I did is almost perfectly done to ruin the panel, like as much as I possibly can. And because we can push the panel so hard, I'm able to exacerbate it. And GameScope, as far as I know, does not have any type of pixel orbiting type of stuff, or moving, shifting the pixels just even a little bit over time, which is what a lot of OLED panels do. And there's a lot of like Android OLED phones. You may not notice it, but like when you have the clock symbol at the top, it's moving. It's, if you were to put it like on time lapse, you'd see that thing just kind of scrolling back and forth. And that's to prevent you seeing any type of clock that is with image retention on OLED phones. So there's lots of things that Android does with OLED phones to mitigate burn-in issues. Whereas the Steam Deck doesn't seem to have that. So we'll have to see if Valve maybe tries to be cognizant of that and try to incorporate, pixel orbiting techniques that people can enable or disable if they wanted, which might be a one effective way to combat any type of burn-in. So right now, again, this is saying a lot of words, but I need to preface this is that I made a test that is destroying my panel, and I did. So congratulations to me. I did what I set out to do.
Check.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, and just real quick, comparing your test to Bob's test, Bob is, you know, he's playing a game that doesn't really give him the option to shut off pixels. You, like, if we look in the background, I don't know if in the edit if it's going to show over the shoulder or if Russ and I's faces are going to cover it up. But basically what's happening is Carrie has parts of his screen turned on and parts of his screen turned off, which you can do with OLED. You can't do that on a Switch because Carrie had the option to make a game that gave him the ability to do this. All Bob could really do is take a good screenshot for his and test it, because Nintendo is way more locked down. And yeah, he's showing us now. You can see the black parts of the screen. Those have never, they're not on.
So can you see it? Can you see?
Yeah, we can see it.
Right there.
It's a little small for me, but I'll believe you.
Yeah.
If I remember, I'm going to try and zoom in on in post to see this.
Here, let me get to the desktop. Because right now you're only taking a look at the SDR stuff. So hopefully...
Make sure that you talk while you're showing this so that it puts the screen on you.
Okay, so in the black part of it up here, let me go over here. Right over here, you can see HDR 1000. And then over here we have SDR. It may be hard to see. If you can zoom in, you would see it. But it is already apparent that it's there.
That's crazy.
And you've got a video that came out, by the time you're watching this, it either came out yesterday or earlier today.
Yeah, I'm gonna have this out on Monday. What's interesting is that because I did red, green, and blue, you can actually see those pixels not able to push the same max that it could before. So you have this like pixel differential. Like, so the after image is kind of like has like a green hue to it or a blue hue to it or a red hue to it because of the one subpixel that I'm not using, right? Like, so, or the two mm-hmm. subpixels that I'm not using, you're seeing the inverse of what it's able to do. It's pretty interesting. But yeah, even on here, you can see what's going on. If I could try to show something that's like a little bit brighter.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Russ, does this make you consider? Does this make you worry at all about your? I can hear the little sound effects. Does this make you wonder at all about the? You know how your OLED Steam Deck, Russ?
No, not at all. I mean, I just use it in a regular use case, you know, and so. The thing is, to get to that point would probably take me 10 years of playing something that's very static, and mm-hmm. I don't plan on playing my Steam Deck for 10 years. There'll be another Steam Deck by then, hopefully. So,
talk when you're showing us something, Kerry, so that a camera will focus on you.
I'm trying to get this so that you guys can see it. I think we're just gonna have to like zoom in, and I could, you know, just I'd have to get in close, but my camera is like fixed focus right now. I'd have to get this closer. It's outrageously apparent to me right here. Once you see it in the video, it's very apparent.
And we'll link the video down below in the show notes so that people can get there easily, because I think it's an interesting video, and there's going to be a lot of comments. Hey, Russ, what are the comments that are going to pre-annoy you?
It's gonna be, it's gonna be people like, well, see, the Lenovo Legion Go is better, you know, those kind of things. Like, come on, man, it's like just one tiny test, you know, for something, and the whole spectrum of things involved in a handheld, you know, there'll always be people who just kind of focus on those things, and you know, it's great. I mean, if that's what bothers them, you know, is the fear of burn-in, then sure, I get that, you know, but mm-hmm. I think this is a pretty good demonstration that you have to go to some pretty extreme lengths,
yes,
to get that.
Yeah, it's that's the thing I don't want people to walk away from here, is that this is going to be like they have to have doom and gloom, worry about what type of brightness that they're running on their screen. I will say that there's one thing here that Valve could do, and I don't know if they do it just yet, but because the device needs to be on while you're downloading games, it would be beneficial if it could like automatically like just go to the lowest brightness while it's sitting there just downloading nothing. Like, you're not doing anything with it, and there's no reason for the display to be at like 75 or whatever brightness,
right.
It should auto dim the screen at the very least to as low as possible. I think that's like a worthwhile mitigation that they could implement. And technically it should be for the LCD as well, because there's no reason to be just chewing up like an extra watt or whatever. Like,
yeah,
just lower it, dim it.
I just, so when I got the OLED deck, I didn't install my retro stuff until just last week, right? And so that means, and for some reason, my scrapes, they were gone. So I had to rescrape, which is always so fun. So I set it up and I had it, you know, going to scraping all of it. For those of you who don't do retro stuff, scraping is where the device is going out on the internet, going to a certain websites, finding art for your retro games and downloading that, so that when you are looking at the front end, it's, you know, instead of just seeing an ugly list of games, you see all of the art that's associated with those games. If you set it up right, you can just kind of look at it for a second, and then it'll bring up a video of the game, all that stuff. So I was scraping my retro games, and I had to have it sitting there, and it basically sat there on for 2 days while it was scraping through all of the stuff that I wanted to have. And I don't understand why there's not a way. Maybe one of you guys can explain technically that there's no good way to do this. Why can't they just shut off the damn screen when it's like, is there a reason?
No, in Windows you can. In Windows, there's a command that you can send, which is always a power CFG command. iNeo and their iSpace 2 actually have this single command that you can just press a button, and it'll turn off the screen, and you can still download in the background. For all intents and purposes, it's just turning the display off, and the system's still running. Yeah.
I would love it if I could hit the button on my screen and have it say, do you want to shut the system? Do you want to put the system to sleep, or do you want to put the display to sleep? And then I could pick one and then have that happen while it's downloading games.
Yeah. So this would be it. Technically, it should be possible because if I'm correct here, this is a part of the ACPI table. The standards for laptops and stuff. There is in Windows, you could do like screensaver mode. You can have it just disable the screen. That's the command that you're sending to the thing. Instead of waiting a minute for it to just disable the screen, you're just forcing that command in, and it's just going to the ACPI table saying disable the screen, and the screen turns off. That should technically be possible on Linux.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's move on to. So, do you guys want to talk about the App Store, or do you want to talk about Xbox? Layoffs. Which one do you want to hit? Because I don't know if we have time for both.
Up to you guys.
Let's talk about the layoffs.
Okay, let's hit those layoffs. So, Microsoft, there's two terrible... First off, they just hit the most valuable company in the world. They surpassed Apple as the most valuable company in the world. And then, like, the same week, they laid off 1,900 employees from Activision Blizzard... both from like a user support and some devs, and like anybody who was in charge of physical releases as well, which is crazy to me. I put out a video. I kind of talked about what I thought was a hot take that, you know, I understand that if they have two people that do the same, like you get somebody doing this job in this company, you get somebody doing this job in this company, one company buys the other. Now you only need one person to do that job. I do understand that. But at the same time, you know, you go back to when Nintendo launched the Wii U and it bombed so hard that Satoru Iwata said, I'm not going to get paid this year. And Shigeru Miyamoto cut his pay by 70%. And a bunch of other executives at Nintendo, they cut their pay and kept the employees. And to me, that makes a lot of sense because that means that, you know, the devs and the people who work there, they're going to do a better job and they're not going to be looking elsewhere for a job because they feel like the company is loyal to them. Whereas if I'm working, even if I didn't get laid off, if I worked at Activision Blizzard after today, I would be like, yeah, I'm looking somewhere else because I could be next on the chopping block. Russ, you said you wanted to talk about this story. What are your thoughts on it?
So like with everything, I've got multiple minds about it. But the first is just, yeah, like that sucks. I don't ever want to work in a place where I feel like my job just might be in jeopardy because of the decisions of somebody higher up, you know? And maybe I'm very sensitive to it because of my, you know, nearly 23 years in the military where that just wasn't a thing we thought about. You know what I mean? I never thought about, oh, am I going to get fired? It's more about when am I going to leave? You know, that kind of thing. But I think the gaming industry in general is a little bit more transient. Like just in observing Twitter and stuff, you see a lot of like former, and then they put like five different companies in their title, right, in their bio, you know? So I think that there is this transient kind of idea in game development. So it hurts, you know, thinking about that. And I'd hate to be in a position where I feel like I might lose my job. No fault of my own, just because of restructuring and whatnot. The other mind that I have about it is that it might be overall more beneficial for the gaming industry because all of these people with all these talents that were let go, not because of the lack of talent, but because of just restructuring, they all need to find jobs. And think of all the companies and indie game studios and stuff that are going to crop up because of this, where they're going to be better now because they're getting, you know, Xbox and Activision employees. And so I like the idea that talent is getting spread out throughout the industry a little bit more, just because these people need to find work. But that's a very like long look. We're talking like 3 years from now, there might be some benefit to it. So those are the kind of two minds I have. It really sucks, but then I'm hoping, you know, there's this kind of wish that I have that maybe some new studio is going to crop up. We're going to get some pretty cool indie games out of it or something.
I think it's possible, but I also think it's unlikely that that happens, because a lot of times when an indie studio pops up, it's because somebody was just very successful doing something. They got a windfall from that and they said, okay, I'm going to take this cash and I'm going to try and make my own company. Whereas in this, these are just people who, like, they basically just got fired. They got some severance, but like they're just probably going to go looking for another job. And we had in the dev space, we had Riot Games just fired a bunch of people, or laid off. I don't like saying fired. They laid off a bunch of people. Discord, Twitch, I mean, like, 2023 was a nightmare for devs because just so many people got fired. And now we got another 1,900 on top of that. So I don't know that we'll see a bunch of indie studios. I think they'll just end up, like, some people will just exit the gaming industry and start doing other development work. But I hope I'm wrong about that. What do you think about this, Carrie?
So I'm glad we talked about this, just because this is a bigger problem than just game dev. The tech space that I work in as well has this has been a problem in general. And, you know, what we're seeing, you know, I again, I'm not an economist, but what I look at is, like, inflation rate is super high. A McChicken in 2019 was $1, and today it's $2.89. So that's a big increase in terms of how much stuff costs. So inflation is higher, and we're getting lots of layoffs from everything, not just game devs, but a lot of tech sector places. You look at it, there's, I mean, almost like it's got to be like 100,000 between Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft, just tech jobs in general. And you look at these companies that, you know, the thing that really sucks for the Activision side of things was they forced this mandate of, like, no, you need to come to California and you're going to come to work every day and we're going to fire you next month. Like, why go through that entire thing? And I know why they do it, because you have places, other places that are not game dev, making this 5-day work week comebacks after COVID happened, when COVID, created the idea that, hey, we don't actually need to come in all the time. We can actually work from home and get our stuff done. And that exists and can be possible. But one of the things that companies are doing, are mandating 5-day work weeks, is they are hoping for more attrition. They want people to leave on their own accord without having to pay for severance. They want people to say, you know what, screw this, I'm going to go find something else, because they're fed up. And for them, that's a bonus for a company, for a person to make up their own mind to leave. So there's lots of things to do. You know, you have, talked about Satoru Iwata, you know, the executives there taking a pay cut, which is what you want to see, because if the executives made a decision and they failed, it should be on them and it shouldn't be rolling downhill. And you look at what Embracer Group has done, and they've acquired a bunch of companies, and then the Saudi Arabia thing that came along said, we're not going to buy it. And then they were like, oh no, we're left holding the bag. And they're still slashing and burning. They're still slashing and burning a lot of different stuff. And that's a fault on them, not on these companies that they acquired. That's 100% on them. And that's not like overlap of positions. That's just they made a bad decision, and now everyone that's underneath is facing the consequences of that. That's messed up. Whereas the Activision Blizzard thing, you could kind of say, well, yeah, I could see the overlap for marketing and PR and all that other stuff. It still sucks. And I don't, you know, you're still in relationship with, oh, Microsoft just crossed the $3 trillion mark. And I know it's not liquid money, but still, that's a tremendous, outrageous amount of money that it's almost might as well be infinite. So at some point, you have to kind of weigh these things. And this is a greater conversation as it is, but what we're seeing is inflation is very high. Jobs are going down. These mega companies are incentivized to acquire, because the more they acquire, they can get loans easier because the value of their company goes up. So banks are giving loans for that, but banks aren't giving loans for money because interest rates are too high. So inflation's high, interest rates too high. Money's expensive. Money's expensive in both ways. So what we're seeing is this attrition of people, these companies buying other companies, getting more mega conglomerate. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing just big companies being able to get bigger, smaller companies getting snuffed out. And it's a general problem. And it's, you know, where I work right now, I'm working like 6 days a week and I get paid fine. But like, I worry about it because like, I'm like, I got to just make sure I save up enough money so that I could like withstand anything that happens. And that's where I am right now. And, you know, I'm fine with that, but like, it's tough. It's tough. And I would hope that all these people that, you know, it's, how do you tell them to save when they're forced to come back to California to possibly rent or whatever? And they might be just getting by paycheck to paycheck. So when they get fired, there is no nest egg that they can say, you know, let me make an indie game studio. And maybe some of them can, but I'm agreeing with Russ is that like, you look at this stuff and like, man, there's some like mega talent that is just there. And if they just group together, they could knock something out of the park. But it's, that's a tough ask. That's a tough ask to do because you need all of them to basically work for free and get something out the door so that they right. can reap the benefits of that. It's tough. And there's a larger conversation we need to have about this, that effectively we're in a recession that no one's talking about. And,
yeah,
that's, you know, that's the problem.
So one thing that maybe could have been a win-win is if Microsoft Activision had said, you know what, we're going to create our own sub studio.
Yes.
We're going to take an IP that we already own, yeah. you know, and we're going to revitalize this new game, and we're going to pull all these people, these 1900 people, and create a new like Santa Monica studio kind yeah. of thing. You know what I mean? And that would have been amazing. But unfortunately, yeah, now they're just kind of like leaving it up to them instead.
And yeah. they could have done that multiple times because they just acquired a boatload of IP. Like exactly. they have so much IP
yeah.
that is just sitting there. And yeah. then on top of that, they took this game, this survival game that Blizzard was working on for 6 years.
Yeah, it's...
And threw it in the trash. I mean, that doesn't mean it won't ever come out. We've seen Blizzard do this before. They were working on what was essentially the sequel to World of Warcraft. And like it was in that, and it ended up becoming Overwatch after they decided to shut that down. So maybe that will happen. But like after 6 years of development... you know, they said it had something to do with the engine.
So, you know, there's that one thing that seems crazy to me that doesn't make sense to anyone. Like you look at Warner Brothers, right? It's like, oh yeah, that Catwoman, movie we made, we did the whole thing. It's completely done. We're not going to release it. Instead, we're going to make a tax break out of it. And it's like,
yeah.
what? Like you get a tax break for making a movie and then not releasing it. Like that's more profitable. Like something is wrong. Something is just flat out wrong. And things really need to change because perhaps maybe this could be a tax write-off for Microsoft, right? Like this is, oh, you know, we're going to make more money if we just cancel this.
Well, and it could be like, I mean, they're doing this in January. Like me, I don't know when their fiscal year is, but
think, yeah, it's like
it might have some, it might have something to do with that kind of thing too.
Yeah.
Like just, there's a lot of businessy stuff that yeah. I don't really understand or know anything yeah. about, but there's
makes
a strategic sense. Yeah, there's a strategic reason why certain yeah. things happen in the industry at certain times of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a thing that, for all intents and purposes, makes no sense. But because of the rules and laws and how everything is aligned, it does actually make sense. And it shouldn't exist, but it does because of how everything's written. And people are just leveraging all of those things to create a windfall. Like, right, this is a benefit for us to cancel this and do all this. So
right.
that's how things actually wind up happening. But when you tell someone just, oh, yeah, we had 2,000 people working on a product for 6 years, we're getting rid of it. Like, wow, that just seems terrible. That seems like a big waste of money.
Well,
like,
just real quick, they didn't have, like, all those people were not working on that particular
right.
game. I think there were,
yeah.
like, 150 people working on that survival game.
Right, but there's still some number of
yeah.
dollars that was invested into this project that was multi-millions, and it just,
mm-hmm.
just poof, like, just gone. It's like Factions, right? Last of Us Factions. They were working on it for whoever knows how long, and it's all gone.
Yeah.
So, yeah, somehow, some way, these companies get a write-off in this because they invested into it, and nothing will happen with it, and they get to put those numbers somewhere, and something good comes out of it.
Yeah, I like to call people who do that kind of thing spreadsheeters.
Yeah,
like they just move in numbers around until the number on the right turns red or turns from red to black. Well, anyway, boy, that kind of ended the show on a bad note. You know what? Let's talk about the App Store very, very quickly. This will be like a lightning round. For those of you that don't know, this channel, my YouTube channel, started out as a podcast about Stadia. And when Stadia came out, like, there was this big kerfuffle because Apple said, you can't make an app and put it on our store. And their reasoning was the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And I'm saying this as an Apple fan. I got my iPhone there. We're recording this on my MacBook. It was a stupid reason. They were like, well, we want to be able to review every game that's on your service so that we can like put like a little, you know, this is E for everyone, or you know, their little rating about who each game is for, which is a stupid argument because they don't do that for Netflix or HBO or any of those other things. Well, Apple has, they've decided, you know what, we're going to go ahead and allow the App Store to bring in things like Stadia if Google had the intestinal fortitude to stick it out, because they gave up real quick. But things like Xbox Cloud Gaming, GeForce Now are no longer going to be these web apps. They're going to actually be able to be apps that you can just download from the store. And that makes it a much easier way to use these things. Russ, you use a lot of, like, you have a lot of those telescopic controllers that you put on your on your phone. I've used like two of them. I've used the Backbone and I've used a GameSir, one of the older GameSirs. I don't remember which one it is, but maybe, I'm not sure. And then I've used the Backbone, and it's a pretty cool way to play. And then being able to install an app and just have it work with all this stuff sounds really cool. Are you interested in this stuff at all, Russ?
You know, when I first heard the news, I was like, I thought you could already do that, but that's because I've already just shifted over to use it on Android handhelds and phones instead. You know what I mean? And so they are definitely already there. I think that, you know, I have used the web apps before, especially the Xbox One. You know, you like make a little Safari page and then you say add to your home screen and then it's basically there. The thing is, like, the people who like are tech savvy enough to make those web apps like probably don't care, you know what I mean? Like, so there's going to be a new audience maybe where they're like, oh, now there's the Xbox app available for me, you know, where it's always been available. They just didn't know how to make like a web app or any of that kind of stuff, or they didn't want to go through the pain of having a tab open on Safari or whatever. And so I can see that being a benefit, but this is probably going to be a month from now, no one's going to be talking about it kind of thing. You know, it's cool that they're doing it, but it's just a little bit, I don't know, water over the bridge at this point. So
I think that one of the reasons why it's good, excuse me, is yes, for the people who they don't know how to do stuff, that's a good thing. But also, like, all I know that there's been times where I go to use it and then I get logged out because like their security preferences are like, we have to log you out after a certain amount of time. And then when I go to log back in, like, my passwords are stupidly complicated. I have a password manager, and sometimes the password manager doesn't interact very well with the web apps, but it works just fine with a regular app. And so I get into this stupid, I'll have to sit down at my computer, bring up my password, say, put this in big type. And then I'm like typing in my complicated password to get it to work. And then by the time I get it working, I'm like, okay, that was too much of a pain. I just can't be bothered to use it now. So I like that it's going to be in the App Store. We'll see if they actually do it. I don't see why they wouldn't. Carrie, you use Xbox Cloud Streaming quite often, don't you?
Yeah.
Are you going to bother with it on? Well, you have an Android phone, so doesn't affect you even a little.
No. Yeah. I'm glad that they finally changed their tune on it. I'm hoping, you know, like, we saw the whole Fortnite Apple thing is hilarious to me because, like, Google lost that suit, and you can install other app stores on Android. Like, you have that ability. You can sideload on Android since day one, and Google lost. Apple wins and you can't like side loading is
right.
terrible. It doesn't exist. There is no other app store on Apple. So how does Google lose when they've been doing, you know, allowing other things to do? So you could still install Fortnite on Android fairly easily. And
yeah.
they were like, no, no, no. You know, when you say unknown sources, that looks really cryptic. You're going to need to change that. Also, and on Apple, it's like, yeah, you don't even have that ability. And you're like, yeah, that's fine.
Right.
And it's just like, how, and like, I think even Apple lawyers like, how do we win this? Like, how did this happen? As we get closer and closer to this thing, I'm hoping that something happens generally with sideloading as a generality for Apple. I just like that, especially for emulators. Apple makes very good chips. Apple makes very good chips, and their iPhones are very performant. And stuff that is written for those emulators, if you get the developer builds for them, are fantastic. So just from the emulator part of this, I wish that that would happen just because it would make installing on it way better. And people would be able to use their own stuff that's in an iPhone easier because they're very performant. They actually, that's one compliment I will give Apple, is that their ARM stuff and their GPUs are very good. So any less restrictions to enjoy that, the better. That is generally my thing, is hopefully that Apple gets closer and closer to this through EU means or whatever. However this has to happen, I think it's a better overall situation. Not saying that people, like, can use other stuff. I'm still going to use the Google Play Store because I like the Google Play Store. And I think everyone's still going to use the Apple App Store because it works and it's fine. And, you know, buying stuff and you have all your stuff, great. But I still think that people should be able to sideload stuff on there.
I think I'm going to disagree with you. I think if you want to do that stuff, go buy an Android phone. You know, having an iPhone, I don't have to worry about my mom calling me up because somebody tricked her. Because she's not a very tech-savvy person. And somebody tricked her into sideloading some malware onto her phone because she's not a tech-savvy person. And that kind of thing... Like, the same people who are always saying, like, Apple needs to allow other app stores to exist on their market, they're going to be the same people who are going to be writing headlines saying, iPhones are suddenly full of malware. And I'm like, yep, that's exactly what's going to happen.
I mean, there's malware on the App Store already. There's people that had their Bitcoins taken from them on an official App Store app. Just, whoop, took all your stuff, took your money, so long, sayonara, and Apple approved it. So you are effectively also telling people that whatever is on the App Store is totally safe, when that is objectively false. I'm not saying
but
that
Apple
it's gonna
has
happen a
the
bunch.
Ability to stop that. Like, when something happens, it comes through. Apple can step in and say, "You're gone."
Right.
Apple can't do that if it's a secondary store.
Yeah.
And so once it's there forever, and you're screwed.
I mean, Apple has a lot of security mechanisms that they could offer the person to uninstall the app. But saying, like, it's going to be like a virus type of thing where it's going to be permanently on your phone, I don't know if Apple iPhones actually operate like that, because they're all isolated. They're all isolated islands. Like, it's very, very hard to, like, whenever you open up an app, it has its own file storage, right? You can't just, like, start nosing around and noodling around on everything.
That isn't what I meant. What I meant is Apple doesn't have the ability to say, all right, that no longer exists on our store. That's what I meant.
Yeah, but I would just like to preface this, that you, a user, even though I understand most people aren't, everyone should still be concerned that whatever they're downloading isn't necessarily safe just because Apple approved it, because people have been burned on multiple different apps. That's all.
Well, Carrie and I disagree. Russ is going to get the last word on this.
You know, there's several different methods to sideloading on iPhones. You know, they have like the alt store and the side store now. They're all just a pain in the butt. And so from a very selfish reason, like, I want to just have that to be able to sideload stuff. To be honest, the emulation development on Apple, or like on iPhone in particular, is not great, because it's such a small audience and such a small development team. And so you do have Dolphin, but it's a fork of Dolphin. It's not like the Dolphin team working on it, you know, and they've got a couple others like Providence and stuff, but it's just not there. It's not very robust. And so I would love to see that, you know, but yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not yearning to play retro games on my iPhone. You know, there's so many other ways that we can do that. So
that's fair. All right. Well, let us know in the comments down below all the reasons why I'm wrong. And I look forward to your angry comments. But that's going to do it for us for this week. Carrie, you said you've got a video that just came out about the OLED deck. What's coming up after that?
Yeah, I have stuff that I've had on the back burner. It's just my real life job has been absorbing every ounce of my brain cells. So I've been just basically doing one video a week. But I have a SteamOS look and like NUX that are running 7840HS. I have to get the Retroid Pocket 4 Pro. The unit I bought finally came in, so I have to review that. I just don't know if I have the bandwidth to do it. So right now, the only thing I have is taking a look at the Steam Deck OLED burn-in.
And there you go. And then, Russ, what are you burning in right now?
So I'm kind of, today's a clean slate day for me. I just finished a video yesterday, and so I'm just kind of working through. But one thing that came in the mail yesterday is this thing called the R33S. This is a Mio Mini ripoff, basically, but with a different chipset. And so it's pretty interesting. You know, you can play some like ports. I can play Shovel Knight and Stardew Valley on this thing, which is kind of crazy. But it also sucks. And so I don't know. I might make a video about it. I'm not sure yet. That might be what I'm working on today. Sucks.
That's what the S stands for.
It also sucks. Right. Yeah, like the buttons are terrible on it. The center button, this is the dumbest thing. The center button, which is the menu button, like if you have muscle memory, you press that to exit a game on the Mio Mini Plus. That's the reset button for the console.
Oh, perfect. So
it's like you're just playing, like, how do I get to the menu? Boom, reset your machine, basically.
Fantastic.
So,
that's called yeah. the I will no longer play that game I was just playing button. I've been playing for an hour. How do I save? Yeah. Oh, there it goes.
And so certain emulators, you know, because these are using custom firmwares that have been built for other devices, it expects you to press like the L3 and R3 button to bring up like the PSP menu, for example. There's no L3 and R3 on this thing at all. So you cannot exit a game when you start a PSP game at all. And so you have to hit the reset button basically. Fantastic. To reset your device at that point.
Amazing.
And so there's many reasons why it sucks, but I don't know. We'll see if people like it or not.
I cannot wait to watch it and hear all of your thoughts. But that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you guys for hanging out with us here on the Nerd Nest podcast. And we'll see you next time. Stay awesome, everybody. Bye-bye.